Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mean Team.
Ed Jin.
With guest co-host
Trevor Alcove.
Were they like playing on Marathon or something?
No, every other build time was much shorter. I mean, obviously they did that because they're like, okay, when you found a new city, you should connect it to your capital.
So it sounded like you said Marathon.
I did say Marathon.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 258. I'm Trevor Alcove, and I am joining regular co-hosts Dan Q.
Civilizations.
The Mian Team.
Have I got some footage for you?
Mad Jin.
I'll see your footage and up you some armage.
And Makalua.
Hi.
Civilization 6 news over the past couple of weeks, which was very substantial, and we rightly speculated that there would be lots more at and after E3 2016, because on the last episode, it's like, so, not a lot in the past 2 weeks, and I think the past 2 weeks made up for the previous 2 weeks of no new information.
Oh, yeah, it was the whole get ready for E3 thing.
Exactly.
Roughly 2 to 3 minute videos that have been released here. One of them is showing the American Civ and their leader, Teddy. The other one is about unstacking cities. So you have different districts and different hexes. So you focus them towards science or culture or military, etc. And they are more vulnerable than if they are in the cities.
The thing I really like about Teddy, as a lot of people have pointed out in the thread on CFC, he's got a ton of unique bonuses just tied to him. Like, he got 3 bonuses for the Civ, and then 3 bonuses for the leader and their historical agenda.
Yeah. He sounds like the kind of AI that will be a really annoying runaway on the other continent. I'm hoping he turns into the giant troll. Like, he conquers everything on his continent, and then you try to invade him, and he just gets a huge bonus from his agenda.
Nope, screw you.
I'm going to win culture now. Come stop me. Everyone's favorite. You'll see.
I mean, yeah, if you got the Rough Rider unique unit there, gaining culture for kills on your home continent, and then later on you got the film studio, which we talked about before, that increases American tourism during the modern era, despite the fact when I think, oh, yay, unique something in the modern era, that'll be useful. But if you got the Rough Rider earlier on, gaining culture... And if culture and tourism work like they do with Civilization V Brave New World, where you've got tourism as your kind of offensive culture, man, that sounds bad, defensive culture is culture, maybe it's not so bad then. Maybe it's not so bad.
Or maybe it is.
Or maybe it is, and that's why Firaxis and 2K started off by talking about America, so they could talk about how bad it is. There we go, that makes sense.
Totally.
Yeah.
Much better.
It's the most obvious explanation you could think of, for sure.
Well, I mean, they do say in the video that, quote, the Americans are a powerful cultural civ which shines in the middle and late game.
And they do say that.
So, that just means we're going to take you out in the early game, and then you can't do anything in the middle or late game. Bye. Okay.
Well, except that their combat bonus will probably work in all eras, so they'll still be harder to take out.
And they've still got the Founding Fathers thing that lets them do their government stuff faster.
Yep. Although, still no explanation on what the government stuff, quote-unquote, is.
Yeah, shorten the time needed to earn government legacy bonuses, which are...
Yeah.
Things!
Silence. They just like the speculation, that's all.
Welcome to a reveal, except that we're not going to reveal all of it, because that's related to another thing, which we just revealed existed. So we're not going to tell you what it is.
You like it when the community goes crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Usually pretty good at finding stuff, and then getting confused, and then running around in circles.
And like in the unstacking cities videos, like Ariok the Fourth, like right at the end of the video is Eagle Eyes. He pointed out there's a submarine there. I didn't even see that.
Well,
oh yeah, there's lots of dissection of screen grabs from videos and screenshots. But you know what? You assume it's a submarine. It could not be.
Could be an underwater boat.
Plus, there's also dissecting this, what's just marketing mock-up and what's real?
Well, I'm pretty sure it's all marketing mock-up. I don't think we've seen a real gameplay video yet.
Scion on CFC said, do you think we'll get a video of a Civ with all details every week from now on? It is 17 Civs left to give all details on and 17 weeks until release. Except that we don't actually have all the details on America because, again, refer back to what are these government legacy bonuses. So...
No, you can't ruin the 17 weeks of Civilization, Dan.
Hey, this is what I said a while ago.
And they did say there were going to be 18 Civs upon release. So, yeah, that fits. The Unstacking Cities video, again, to go along with America as a show.
There are many different kinds of districts in Civilization VI. Some Civs will have unique districts only they can construct.
Oh, that's been new in the last couple of weeks.
So there's more than 13 districts.
Yeah, they did mention that. That's true.
Yes.
Yeah, there's 15.
Oh, we know for a fact that there's just two Civs that have unique districts.
Mm-hmm. Just two.
Just two. And they'll be the very last two revealed, of course.
Totally.
The library is the first building built on the campus. Later, during the medieval era, you'll research education and be able to construct a university. Finally, during the modern era, you'll be able to build the research lab once you've discovered chemistry. Each time you build a building on the campus, it will increase the amount of science that city is producing.
Yeah, it says something about chemistry?
Yes, yes, research lab at chemistry.
Of course, that doesn't really matter or anything because no one knows what the tech tree looks like.
Actually, to a tangent on that from another video, we're going to kind of mash these things together. As much as we like to compartmentalize things.
Yeah.
Technology number from the walkthrough developer commentary video, because there was the video that was shown at E3 behind closed doors, and then they released that video online, and then where was the developer video?
One thing that we wanted to mention, this has been out there on the internet, that we got rid of some technologies from the tech tree.
And I must have taken half and put it in the culture tree, right?
Well, we did, and even that has been a little bit misinterpreted because I think somewhere one of the interviewers that was talking to us heard that we were doing 50% of the technology or something like that and thought that we were losing 50% of the tech tree. Well, that's actually not the case at all. There were about 80 technologies in the tech tree for Civ 5. We have slightly knocked down the number of technologies in the tech tree, but then we've added the whole culture tree on top of that. And we went ahead and did a little quick math before we came on air today, and it's actually 50% more progression nodes than we had in Civ 5.
Like, I don't know how it works, but I'm assuming you look into the research in the tech tree and the research in the culture tree at the same time, right?
Possible.
Nope, they're going to make you navigate through screens repeatedly.
They talk about a parallel trees, so I'm assuming they go in parallel.
Like and parallel parking.
And one assumes that tech tree uses beakers and civics tree uses culture.
Campus gets a bonus when it is built near a mountain or rainforest. Other districts will have their own adjacency bonuses. Theater districts benefit from being built adjacent to a wonder. The Great Library can only be built adjacent to a campus.
So if the Great Library needs to be built next to a campus, what if the campus is removed?
Well, I haven't talked about campuses being removed, only that the campus could be, say, pillaged by invaders, seeing as how they take up a hex on the map. Wasn't that speculation that you'd be able to, like, pillage the wonder, seeing as how it also takes up a hex?
Oh, I hope so.
I don't know. I would suspect that if the campus was somehow disabled and you hadn't started constructing the Great Library, then you wouldn't be able to construct the Great Library until the campus was restored. Or perhaps if the Great Library was being constructed adjacent to the campus and then the campus got pillaged, then perhaps construction on the Great Library would stop until it was repaired.
Yeah.
But who the heck knows?
What if it's, like, finished and it gets pillaged, though?
Well, then it doesn't matter because it's already finished.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of like in Civilization 5. Oh, I need this coal in order to construct the factory. Oh, the coal just got pillaged. Oh, it doesn't matter. The factories are constructed. You're good.
I'm pretty sure once it's built, because that would be really annoying. Can you switch production once you start building stuff, like districts and wonders? Because if you can, then you can just start slapping down wonders and then switching to something else and get all partial wonders around a city for giggles.
I would hope so. Man, I'm constructing the Great Library. Oh, it looks like my neighbor wants to take over my city. I'll be okay if all I have to do is construct a unit in here. I can't switch off the Great Library. What?
No.
Thank you for constructing the Great Library. And since they've talked about how you can see the progress of what's going on, like being built in a Civ by checking the map, because it increments in animation, like from turn to turn or what have you, then I'd be like, okay, so I'm just going to sit here and wait for you to finish constructing the Great Library, and then I'm going to take your city.
No. Are you done yet? Are you done yet? Are you done yet?
Hey, don't take your builder out of the city. I want to capture that at the same point. Don't be a jerk.
There are going to be 18 civilizations when we release, and we absolutely are going to have some brand new ones that have never been in the series before. They're not the ones we're going to announce first.
Right, fair enough.
With the tried and true ones first. Four so far, so it's America, Egypt, China, and Japan.
The new Q&A confirmed for UA. For you. For
me?
Yeah, for you. For each Civ.
We have been spending quite a bit of time watching the community reaction to all the rollout of information on Civ 6, so we sort of know what some of the burning questions they have, and we know our community loves to speculate on what Civs might come in the game and how they might be implemented in each of our games. So the key fact that you need to be able to understand how a Civ is made up in Civ 6 is, like, how many unique bonuses does it get? And we haven't been very consistent about that. We haven't really explain that in any kind of detail, but I want to explain that now. Most important piece of information is that there are four unique elements to every civilization. Just like in Civilization V, a civilization as a whole has a unique ability. That's typically something that maybe will last all throughout history. The second thing that every civilization gets is they get a unique ability that's based around the time period of the leader. And then there are two other bonuses that every civilization is going to get. One is a unique unit. The fourth one is what we call unique infrastructure. And so that means that you're going to be able to get a unique building or a unique improvement, very much the way a lot of the civilizations did in Civ 5. And we haven't revealed any of these yet, but there's a third possibility. You can have a unique building, you can have a unique improvement, or you can have a unique district. People have to wait to see what a unique district looks like.
So UA, UL, UUI.
Or UD, unique district.
Or UB, or UD, or UU.
You see?
Everyone's going to have a UA. Everyone's going to have a unique unit. Although, of course, in the case of America, they have two.
Except that the second unique unit is part of the leader uniques, which is why people all very speculate that there's going to be multiple leader civs. Say Teddy, for instance, has a lot of stuff, and it's all almost equivalent to what you would normally have in Civ 5, just as a leader. And that's separate from the actual UU for the Civ and the infrastructure for the Civ. And then people argue, screw that. Just make us four Civs, not multiple leaders. No one wants multiple leaders because you need multiple Civs.
And we're going to have to wait to find out what a unique district looks like. So just letting you know there's unique districts in the game. We'll talk more about that later.
Probably when a Civ that shows up with a unique district comes up.
For this video, Firaxis and 2K invited people to tweet the official Civ game Twitter handle with their questions, and that they would answer it live at E3 on the live stream and then archive after the fact. Street Guru, is Civilization 6 built on a new engine, and is it 64-bit or 32-bit? Dennis Shirk, the senior producer, one of the four gentlemen in this video.
It is built on a new engine. We are 64-bit, decided to take out the trash too when it came to the game core, so they rewrote that from the ground up.
Oh, wow.
Maybe now turns won't take 5 minutes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, some of their game core could be, like, super old. Because if it hasn't been broke and it's all been 32-bit for the longest time, then they probably haven't changed it much.
Yeah, there wouldn't be cause to, yeah.
But, yeah, going 64-bit means, hey, look, there's a lot of crap in this engine that we can't use anymore. Burn it down. Start again.
Yep. So since we've gone to 64-bit from 32-bit, everything takes twice as long now to do in the game.
10-minute turns now.
Exactly how it works. Look out.
Yep.
Else in the video was Ed Beach, lead designer, the art director, Brian Busati, and then the Civ community manager at 2K, Dave Hinkle, who hosted this video.
They also talked a bit about diplomacy.
There are probably three major principles that are governing what is different about the diplomacy system, and I can hit on all those at least quickly. The first one is that diplomacy changes a lot over time. Early in the game, even your borders or your empires don't work yet. You know, you just haven't been able to kind of establish yourself as an empire yet. And so you don't have to worry about open borders. You can just run across people's territories right from the very beginning of the game. It doesn't take long for that to kick in, and then you can have open borders agreements and things like that. But you can tell that it's sort of like the Wild Wild West right in the beginning of the game. Now, we start to get very formal with the way diplomacy works once you get past the Renaissance. And we're not talking about that in detail yet. The second thing is that there is a ton of information available to you about what's going on in the world diplomatically, mm-hmm. but we're going to make you work to understand what that is that's happening. You're going to have to actively engage with the world. So sending traders, sending diplomats, sending delegations with gifts, and later in the game, sending spies, those kind of things. That's all going to increase the amount of information that you pick up on the other civs in the game. And then the third thing that's very different about diplomacy is that every leader has multiple agendas, which is sort of how they like to play the civilization game that might be different than the other leaders in the game. So they're not, all the AIs are not playing sort of the same way. They're going to look at the diplomatic landscape in sort of with their own unique eye.
One of the more interesting things I heard was that early in the game now, borders, quote unquote, don't work. So it's like you always have open borders now.
Gee, it sounds like reality.
Yeah, borders are just non-existent.
Lines in the sand. And a lot of
I won't have to declare a war on you to go through.
Well, you still can, but you don't have to.
Yeah. Well, I didn't say I wasn't going to. I was just confirming that it wasn't necessary. I have to come up with a new excuse now.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like that because now it's no longer, oh, look, somebody's settler is coming and they're trying to cross my territory. I'll just buy these Texas. Ha ha, you can't get through. Now it'd be like, nope. Whatever. Going through. You want to stop me? Attack.
And then lastly, the third thing is that every leader has multiple agendas, although we have talked about that before. I would say so that the big new pieces of information with respect to diplomacy from this Q&A video was the open borders. Thing not having to worry about that early on.
Well, especially if you get locked off on the peninsula or something. That's always annoying. It's like, okay, now I have to go around.
Yeah.
I guess I'm going to turtle this entire game.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's great. Yeah, I'll just go around. I'll just go into the water.
Yeah.
Oh, crap. Wait. Oh, I hadn't researched optics by the time that unit left my territory. Okay, I got to go back first.
Yeah.
God.
The trade system is certainly inspired by what was done with Brave New World. So you still have a capacity to a limited number of trade routes. You build the trader units, and then that unlocks the ability to choose, okay, I'm going to put in play this route for this given point in time between these cities, and it's going to have a limited duration. But there are probably, I'd say, three new elements to that as well. One is that your roads are built by your traders. We let you build them by hand later in the game once you unlock the military engineer, but initially having them set up by the traders makes a lot of sense. Second thing is the time that a trade route stays in play is based on how long it is. In Brave New World, it was more sort of a fixed amount of time. I think it was always 30 turns in most games. But now what you can do is you can think about that, and maybe I need a road between my two nearest cities, and so you're going to want to put that in play, and maybe it doesn't give you as much turn. That's still good because it's such a close proximity. You know that trade route's not going to be taking too long for it to expire. So you get that trader unit back, you'll have that road connection in place that your units can use, and now you can maybe send it out to a foreign land. And then the other thing that we have with trade units is, just like a lot of things in the game, every city is specialized by which districts it chooses to build, and that's how we compute what yield you get out of a trade route. It's not like all trade routes are just like X food and X production or X gold. A neighbor of yours, he's going playing really heavily science, and he's got all sorts of science districts. If you're trading with him, you'll be sucking in some of that science from him. But that could be culture, that could be religion. There are all sorts of things that could be based on what's happening around you.
Wait, do roads not go away when the trade route ends?
That would be weird.
Well, I mean, if it was a trade road for the snow, it would eventually go away if it wasn't being transversed. But hopefully you're using some material that's a bit more permanent than, you know, the impressions of your feet.
Well, I'm sure the first ones might just be in the impressions of the feet. Traders find the best path through stuff, and then people follow in the ancient-ish era.
Yes, ish.
But yeah, people on the forum keep wondering if the roads created by trade routes decay over time. And it sort of makes sense that they would eventually, if there was a mechanic in the game that determined whether or not there was use of the road. So say you connect a tiny city to your capital at first just to get the road, and then instead of constantly moving back and forth along that road between those two cities, you actually take that trade route from the little city and, say, send it over to a different place because that's where you want the road. And if no one travels between your capital and that little city ever, why would there still be a road there?
Ed did make the comment about he really disliked how once you constructed a road wherever it was that you were going to have to pay maintenance on it, which to me in a realistic sense means, yeah, if you're paying for maintenance, then even if that road isn't traversed for, you know, X number of turns, you're still paying to maintain it whether someone is using it or not. So it's sounding like in Civ 6, I'm inferring here that there isn't a maintenance cost to the road. Your cost is you got to get your trader.
And later in the game, you can build military engineers that can manually build roads.
This does not mean that comparisons to roads as found in Civilization Revolution will not stop, but if it wasn't being used, use it or lose it, and you're not paying maintenance on it, then it would stand to reason that the road would go away, but then as soon as you reestablish that trade route, then there's that road again. Or if the military engineer decided to construct that road. And I'm also assuming the military engineer has, well, I don't know, the military engineer going to have charges like a builder? Or can they just, you know, once you construct one military engineer, you can, like, road your entire empire?
Yeah, I have a feeling that they could go with no maintenance, mostly because you don't get a choice about where the road would be. So you kind of have to leave it up to the algorithms for point A to point B in the game. And that may or may not be the most efficient or best choice.
I was about to say, I think we all kind of winced at that notion here.
Yeah.
I was going to add that the maintenance you pay on an ancient road is the fact that you can't make as good of a profit by trading to a different city if you wanted to connect up your empire.
Yeah, could be. Who knows?
Just pay more for roads.
They really haven't said what roads do. Do they affect trade since they're tied to a trader now? Would they actually improve trade between territories if you got better roads as you go?
Well,
I kept finding in Civ 5, there was just very little incentive to push out from your empire and hook up to the neighbors.
Right. There was a city-state quest that would get you to do it, but it was kind of annoying.
And that was just the city-states. Yeah. It was like the other major empires were always sort of disconnected from you, and right, you had very little incentive to ever connect those. And now you kind of can't avoid it.
Anton Stranger, designer on Civ 6, said it was annoying. Yeah, and you didn't go far enough. Yeah, it was annoying, Anton, because the frickin' city-states wouldn't move their frickin' units.
And back in Vanilla, they would at least do their own portion of the road to the end of their border, and then after some period of time in one of the expansions, they stopped doing that.
So then you got to pay for maintenance for the entire road. Yay, you! Otherwise, from this video, related to something we talked about earlier, question from Colin Kelly. Do some districts and or wonders increase yields of nearby tiles?
Depending upon which specific district or improvement you're talking about, it can go both ways. The industrial zone, that gets a bonus for having mines and quarries adjacent to it. And it's not the mines and quarries that get more powerful, it's actually just the output of the industrial zone that gets built up from that. We also have things like wonders being adjacent to the theater, the culture district, that improves the output of the culture district. We have a lot of terrain-based adjacency bonuses. And actually, there's a bonus just for keeping your city compact, which means that just putting a district next to another district, that can improve the output of all the districts that are interconnected. So just a cluster of districts like that is a good way to set up your city.
Your districts like districts.
That's right.
Although, I guess it depends. I mean, that sort of sounds like it's the fallback position if you can't get nice territory.
Yeah, which probably won't be something you pick to do, because then people would only do that.
Oh, does that kind of mean, like, for example, oh, crap, all the terrain-based pantheons that we saw in Civilization V are gone, so I guess I'm just going to adopt God King.
Yeah.
Although God King was better than a lot of your other options in Jashal.
Yeah.
Probably shouldn't have been.
It'd be like, what if you don't start near any mountains? Where do you put your campuses or police sites, because you have no mountains?
In the marsh.
Marshes, marshes, marshes!
Yeah.
There we go.
That might be the fallback.
What you guys are telling me is I can just keep doing Messenger of the Gods all the time.
Totally. Why not?
Excellent.
No, actually, Mackie, we have a pact of secrecy now amongst the rest of us that one of us has to adopt that before you can get to it. Assuming it's even in Civ 6.
Well, why would it not be? It is the best.
Ivan2294 wanted to know about the coast tiles that have been seen in screenshots and wants to know if it's just for aesthetic purposes or will they have gameplay effect. Brian Busati, the art director.
Well, actually, both. They add some visual interest to the terrain itself. Also, they do have a gameplay feature. You cannot embark from or disembark to a piece of terrain where there's a cliff in between, so you have to go around it.
But there are ways you can get your combat units so that they can actually surprise invade over a cliff. So we'll go into detail on what that is later.
Later.
God.
So you can't do it unless you can.
So it's aesthetic, which means it doesn't do anything, except that it does do something, and eventually you might be able to do something about that doing something.
Next time.
Good answer. Good answer.
Yeah,
pretty much. 10 out of 10.
No. 7 out of 7.
5 out of 7.
And then lastly, from the community Q&A, how large can a city be? Asked Doug Taylor.
In terms of its width across the map, we're still doing the same thing we had with Civ 5. So 3 tiles out, that gives you 36 tiles to manipulate with that city. So probably the more interesting thing to talk about is the population limit.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no strict limit on population. But what you have to do with each city is you have to build up its housing. And housing comes from a lot of things. It comes from supplying fresh water to your citizens. Lots of different buildings and districts in the game will supply housing. Things like a barracks supplies a little bit of housing. Granary does a little bit more. Even a university. So we've looked at all the sort of historical places where people live in cities, and that's actually where housing comes from. Just housing alone is not going to keep your people happy, though. You're going to have to provide luxury resources and other types of what we call amenities. Those are the two factors that go into building a large city, and it's important to build your population in a city because that determines how many districts you can have there.
One thing that's particularly cool about that I wanted to add on with that, there's also no longer any kind of presets. Like in Civ 5, if you were a culture player, you're probably going to have between 3 to 5 cities that you had to go tall. It was just the way that you played. But because happiness is now local, and in terms of amenities and housing, you can actually be a wide player that's playing a really effective culture game. So you have those options. You're no longer kind of bound by those same rules that you were playing in before. A whole other level that you have to this is even when you're passing by another city, you see what they have. Before, you had no idea. You would have had to go in with spies, et cetera, to actually see what's in there. But now you can identify things just by visuals. You know exactly what you're looking at. You know how the AI is specializing their cities just because you've got eyes on the city, which is much more real world to me, and it feels a lot more dynamic because of that. Yeah. It makes combat so much more interesting, too.
So maybe they finally got rid of this tall versus wide issue that we had in Civ 5, and we can finally return to the X and expand of 4X that we have talked about. It may be wishful thinking, he's just talking in the context of culture, but it's not just limited to culture.
Tall empires are dead. Stop using that terminology.
That would be nice. I'll believe it when I see it, but that would be nice.
It is official. It's been facted now. See? Right. Fact.
Yep. Yeah. No.
There shall be no such thing as a city-state-sized empire that calls itself a civ.
It also says that there is no strict limit on population. But again, he doesn't explain what the difference between a luxury resource and an amenity is. We know, Ed, later. But he does say that how many districts you have is determined by your population. Well, that makes sense. If you're going to have a district to support a population, there would need to be a population to support it in the first place. And a need for it.
The E3 walkthrough video, a video with Sean Bean narrating.
In the beginning, the earth was without form and void. The sun shone upon the sleeping earth. Into this swirling maelstrom of fire, air, and water, the first stirrings of life appeared. The seeds of life grew and strengthened. Spread and diversified. Now it required but one more ingredient. A great leader. To unite the quarreling tribes. To harness the power of the land. To build a legacy that would stand the test of time. A civilization. And so it falls upon you to fulfill our people's true destiny. Under your leadership, we shall surely prosper. From the seeds of this small settlement shall you grow our empire. Our people await your command.
It goes through a quick run-through of the game, basic mechanics, basic things. It goes through from start to finish. It's kind of like a speed run of a typical Civ game, showing things like settling, war, barbarians, all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm. And super long build times that they just completely ignored.
No, a brand new city only takes one turn to build a trader now.
Totally. Except even when it says, 30. or 40.
In the developer commentary.
One thing that was done sort of for artistic effect to put this video together in time for E3 was they did cheat on the promotions a little bit.
I noticed that.
The pipe in there. He has a little 7 on his promotion flag.
He's really good.
Flag. You can't even get 7 promotions in the game. So if you're wondering why he's wasting these barbarians in one shot, you know, that's probably why.
Yeah.
Sean Bean hacker confirmed.
Yep.
Well, I mean, the Sean Bean, you know, the commentary, I mean, it's very nice. It's very good for general gamer overview. But it's not telling us anything, except, of course, some people trying to dissect parts of the screenshots, which, of course, is open to interpretation because of marketing markups. It was nice to watch, but I didn't really gain anything new from it other than an appreciation, perhaps, of some of the aesthetic style, assuming that's actually reflective of what's going to be in the game. I don't think we learned anything new that as Civ fans, we can go, oh, let's sink our teeth into this information.
Oh. Some of the stuff, like Supremacy King on, I don't know, page 3 or something like that of the CFC thread. Pop growth slows down as your population approaches the housing cap. So there you go. First amenities is with your local happiness. But see, that statement itself, it slows down as you approach. So just because you have, say, a housing cap of 10 doesn't mean that you can just mass grow until you hit 10. You actually slow down as you approach it. It's more of a buffer to keep you from, like, flying right over it.
Well, that's true, but then we've also got, like, in Civilization 5, you know, unhappiness, you've got a hit between 1 and 9. It's not just suddenly at 10 you get wham. Or, hey, you know, I used to be getting plus 10 food in the city, but now that the city has grown, I'm only getting plus 6, so growth has slowed. So what you described there just sounds like an extension of the logic that we understand to be with housing.
Except Civ 5 doesn't have housing.
I know, but in the Civ 6 context, seeing as how you're going to have housing for people to be in, it makes sense that as you approach the cap, things are going to slow down.
Mm-hmm. Maybe, yeah.
Because houses get more expensive and not as many people can afford them, obviously.
Totally.
We've talked a little bit about how Barbarian Scouts work in some of the other live streams and interviews that we've done about how they kind of figure out where your cities are and then come back and report.
Right.
Once they report back to the camp, then the camp decides that it's going to put together a raiding party. And we actually have 3 different types of raiding parties depending upon where the camp's located.
Mm-hmm. So there are what I call like the melee camps, the standard, what you might expect from a game like Civ 5, where they come up, they have melee ground units that are going to attack you. And there are other camps that are kind of cavalry camps, and they will have horse archers and other things. And the third type of camp is the naval camp. Mm-hmm. So they'll come raiding up your coast.
The way we set it up is in order to get a horse barbarian camp, there has to be a horse resource somewhere on the map within a proximity of them.
If you want a horse, there has to be a horse resource somewhere on the map within proximity of them, quote-unquote, from Ed. Wow, that actually makes sense. Like, where do these horses come from? I know.
Yep. So, again, build near rivers.
It's like, oh, those horses? No, we just had the deer breed with the elephants.
Yep. That's how you get horses.
That's not something I wanted in my head.
Too late.
They were a little horny.
No, that's when you get the rhinoceros involved.
Oh.
What else would you expect from me? Come on.
Yeah.
So, you can also see, like, later in the video, you get the intel report on Teddy's leader screen. You can see that at, like, 647, 648. Shows, like, his relationships with other leaders, his government, his agendas, our relationship with him, even access level, whatever that is. I think it's a really nice change from Civ 5, where you basically had almost no information like that, unless you had, like, Info Addict.
Oh, sounds sort of like the more you interact with them, the more you're going to know about them.
I'm just glad it's, like, right on the leader screen instead of on a separate screen where you have to back out all the time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oops, wait, I have to double check.
I don't want to know.
You want me to denounce that person? God damn it, I don't even know if I like that person.
Inconvenience for experienced players and a hindrance to new players trying to learn the game. You had to go to all these different screens all the time to get this information.
Man, that's a real bummer, Ed, because now our capital is never going to be able to build ships, right? Like, now this is now an inland city.
Wrong. Okay. Yeah, and this is information that has gotten out, but I don't think it's been talked about as much as it could be, because it's very, very cool. Because ships can now be built either in the city center or in the harbor district, mm-hmm. We couldn't build ships right away from our current start position. But once we get to the point where we have, I think it's celestial navigation is the tech that allows you to start putting in harbor districts, then you can drop a harbor down because it would be within 3 of the city center, and boom, the city that's upriver a little bit can actually have a port and start producing ships.
Oh, did you not settle on the coast? Oh, but wait, you too can have ocean-faring vessels. What?
It makes that settling one hex off the water less stupid by the AI. But I guess that leads to a big question. Do you settle on the coast or do you not settle on the coast? I'm sure if you settle on the coast, then ocean-going vessels could probably take the city if they can attack the city center. But if you settle inland and just put a harbor there, then ships can't fight the city.
But can naval trade routes leave from the harbor, or do they have to be sent directly from the city center?
And do trade routes require to be separate land versus water?
Oh, yeah, maybe now you just send a trade route and it transforms into a water one once it hits the coast.
And then it transforms into a sky one when it gets to the air.
Oh, Transformers confirmed in Civ 6. Whoa! Although we kind of had that already in Civilization 5 when you could upgrade, what was it, your cavalry into a helicopter.
Not to mention the horrible game's name, but they did change from land and sea routes to just a single trade route already, so that sort of thing's already been in the game from Firaxis.
You don't want to say the name, do you?
Well, he really does not want to say it.
I don't want to reference the horrible crap in relation to Civ 6.
Fine, I'll say it. Taking a page from Civilization Beyond Earth. There you go. It's been said.
Also in relation to, like, coasts and whatnot, in the chat, Drusane asks, if there are better tile yields on land and you can build more things like improvements in districts, then why settle on the coast when you can just build a harbor and settle inland?
Yep.
And so I guess that means that, yeah, if you can construct ships in a harbor district, then if you're thinking, oh, I want to be able to settle on the coast because I want to get access to whales, for example, then maybe you don't have to worry about that now, because then you can just send out your boat and, hey, it's improved. Hooray.
Given that water hexes, especially ocean, tend to be completely blank and empty and useless, settling a little bit further inland but allowing yourself to have access to a couple water tiles so that you can slap down a harbor and or a wonder or two that might need water. But then that's it, because then you can actually have land for your city to build on.
No, hey, there's the question. Are we going to be able to construct cities in the water just like we could?
Go away. You too can throw your settlers overboard in the middle of the ocean.
The buzzing in the chat, there's also a tech bonus early for a coastal city and you get access to boats right away. Oh, the Eureka bonuses, that's right. So I suppose if it's going to be one of your first cities and you'd like to be able to start constructing boats on the path to get to, what do they call it, celestial navigation, probably need sailing first before that. But yeah, then it would get you down the path to being able to do that. But then maybe subsequent cities you can say, okay, I don't need to put on the coast of this because there really isn't anything in the water. The only reason I did that was to give me kind of a boost early on, and I want to be able to settle more cities that are near this body of water. But it is more advantageous, like Drew said, to, oh, okay, because if I settle on the coast, I'm not going to be able to get access to this tile, at least not get access to this tile quickly and have my city work it. And that is kind of one of those things that is already in Civ, right? It's, okay, settling on the ocean or on the water is probably a good thing, but I mean, what am I going to be able to do as a result of that? Is the trade-off for that better than settling one inland because then I can get access to this particular resource that I wouldn't otherwise be able to get access to, or at the very least, again, not be able to work it because it would be 4 hexes out of my city center instead of 3. The other new piece of information that came across, policies that can be adopted. In terms of choices here, looking at military, referring specifically to the Well of Souls summary, survey, double experience for recon units, so I guess you don't like your scouts, maritime industries, plus 100% production towards ancient and classical era naval units, retainers, plus 1 amenity for cities with a garrison unit, and discipline, plus 5 combat strength and fighting barbarians. So I guess my first comment is, can't really talk about the value of retainers because plus 1 amenity for cities. We know there are amenities, but they have not been defined. So that's either a good thing, a bad thing, I have no idea. Just right off the top, and this is, you know, anecdotally, given we're talking about, we've got these 3 different types of barbarian camps, and we know that barbarians like to move in with a scout, and then they go back to their camp, and then they construct a raiding party. Combat strength against barbarians sounds like a promising early start for a military policy. Mm. I'm kind of torn between that and the double experience for recon units, but then again, it would be nice to know what that experience leads to. What's the promotion path? Is it like Civ 5? I don't know. So just right now, I'm leaning towards discipline.
You know promotions are good, right?
I know promotions are good, but if I've got the plus 5 combat strength and fighting barbarians, and that's going to be able to get me to those promotions, and that would apply to all of my units, not just recon units, where they would get the double experience from the recon units from the outset. They would have to survive first in order to get that experience.
Or you just run away.
All your units are now brave Sir Robin.
Well, sometimes they get cornered along the coast.
But they can embark. You can always throw them off the cliff. They might not land very well.
New meta.
Otherwise, in policies, Diplomatic League, the first envoy you send to each city-state, counts as 2 envoys. Or Charismatic Leader, plus 2 influence points per turn towards earning city-state envoys. Boy, I don't know, like, just up front, the first envoy you send to a city-state counts as 2 envoys. So, I don't know, does that mean that if you have 2 envoys of the city-state, you're getting more influence right away, so it's kind of like having part of Charismatic Leader 2 from the outset?
No. Diplomatic Leader sounds like you get it's your one shot. You would use it if you've not gotten any envoys for city-states, because then you go from 1 to 2 real quick. But then after your first one has been sent to them in whatever form, probably.
Oh, then swap to Charismatic Leader.
Yeah. So basically, if you meet a bunch of city-states real quick, it could be better to start with the get an extra one the first time you send one, because then you're closer to other bonuses. But Charismatic Leader is probably the long game better one.
Or longer, anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
And you can switch policies anytime you want.
Yeah.
You just have to spend gold if it's not at a time that you're discovering a new policy that you can adopt. So, yeah, that sounds good.
Or you just run Charismatic, and every time you get an envoy, you spend the money to flip to the other one.
Yeah.
Use the envoy, spend the money, flip back to the original one.
Let's now dub these policies the Hokey Pokey. Yep. Policies, because you put your left foot in, you take your left foot out. There you go. Yep.
What do we shake it all about?
Always.
That's what it's all about. Economic. Let's see here. Meritocracy. Each city receives +1 culture for each specialty district it constructs. So, I mean, the wording in there, what's the difference between a specialty district and a district? Oh, wait, we don't know that yet.
Some are better than others, and they're special.
Oh, okay.
And things.
Caravanasseries, +2 gold from all trade routes. Oh, well, there you go. Caravanasseries. Oh, does that mean we don't have a caravanassery building to extend the length of our land trade routes? Colonization, +50% production towards settlers. That sounds good. Early on, you have to look at, so what is my production output right now? Oh, I know. Instead of 1, I'll get 50% more, so it's 1.5. Oh, so as long as you got some decent production, that sounds good. And you want to do this wide thing, since you should be able to have a wide empire now. That sounds like good. Just be able to spam, spam, spam out settlers. You probably want to escort them, though. Darn you, barbarians. +1 production in all cities from urban planning. Hey, now that sounds like a good one from the start. Maybe I just do +1 production from all cities. Oh, no, +50% production towards settlers. Yeah, it depends what it is that you want to do. And again, you can swap at will as long as you got the gold. Reduce cost of purchasing a plot by 20%, land surveyors. Well, I mean, that sounds nice. It would be nice if Civilization VI was a little bit better than Civilization V in terms of, hey, your borders are going to expand. Hey, why don't we just take this empty desert hex instead of, you know...
The floodplain?
Or God King, +1 faith and +1 gold in the capital. Or in Turdcast terms, your Calapital. +1 faith and +1 gold... That sounds like a pantheon in Civ 5.
It's very suspiciously like a pantheon. Sneaky pantheons?
And then under wildcard, you've got inspiration, literary tradition, and revelation, which is +2 great scientist or artist or prophet points per turn, respectively.
Revelation, we have to mention that. That's a really important policy because
also with the religion
that's game. How you rush to the religion game.
Yeah.
And you can actually slot that in and start getting great profit points even before you finished your holy site. You really need the holy site to found the religion, but
you do. But if you plan ahead, yeah, revelation can really accelerate you
right
there.
Don't ever remember great artists being referred to before now, so confirmed.
You heard it here first, folks.
So I guess my question is, where's the +2? I don't know, for borrowing from Civ 5, where's, like, great merchant or musician? What about great musician or great general?
I think it's, like, just great artist now. Like, your great artist can give you, like, music, art, or...
What, a great artist is going to try to be everything to everybody instead of specializing? Oh, so that means great artists are weaker than a great musician. Okay. They're a jack of all trades instead of specializing in music. Fact, I'll go with that.
So we have until October. So we're going to have to fill some of that time with more live streams, I think.
I think we will, yeah.
So you guys will see us back again periodically between now and October.
As if there wasn't enough Civilization news, there's just really enough to talk about that this is coming. There's just some very general descriptions. They're not getting into the nitty-gritty yet, but 2K announced this week that it has partnered with Glass Lab Inc., a non-profit learning company, quote-unquote, according to the press release, to bring a modified version of Sid Meier's Civilization V to high schools in North America in the fall of 2017 called, wait for it, Civilization EDU. Quote, Civilization EDU will provide students with the opportunity to think critically and create historical events, consider and evaluate the geographical ramifications of their economic and technological divisions, and to engage in systems thinking and experiment with the causal and correlative relationship between military, technology, political, and socioeconomic development. Unquote. Wow, that is a mouthful.
They couldn't do that when I was in high school?
Nope.
Hey, now you can get your high school diploma by playing Civ.
When I was in high school, StarCraft was new. Not StarCraft 2.
Now, as a secondary school teacher in the province of Ontario, and having this year just started to use Minecraft EDU in my instruction, of course, to find out that Microsoft purchased earlier this year and is discontinuing Minecraft EDU in exchange for the Minecraft educational version. Really? Anyway, I can't help but have a parallel in my mind to... First off,
Microsoft's going to buy Firaxis? Is that what you're going with?
Oh, dear God.
You certainly could speculate upon that. I mean, I think it's better than Electronic Arts. But still, yeah, there's some, you know, some questions, some questions in there.
Civilization brought to you by Konami.
Well, then we need a controller all the time. You want to sell a city, you have to hit the right combo.
This company, Glass Lab, has brought some other commercial titles to the educational market, including SimCity EDU Pollution Challenge. I guess I just kind of picked up on that because it's, oh, SimCity. And then I thought, wait, is that the reboot SimCity that we do not talk about in Polite Company? Or is that the real SimCity? But anyway,
which we also don't talk about.
Seeing as how this is a Civilization podcast, yeah. Teachers who use Civilization EDU, also from the press release, have access to an online dashboard that will provide a report on students' progress, demonstrating how in-game accomplishments relate to problem solving, developer diaries, gameplay tutorial videos, and instructional resources, including an in-depth gameplay guide and lesson plans aligned to academic and 21st century standards, quote-unquote. So again, a lot of marketing speak here.
Mm-hmm.
When you're talking about education curriculum in North America, just how it varies in, say, Canada and the United States and Mexico within those countries, let alone the countries themselves, that is saying very little, but also saying a lot at the same time. In other words, that's a lot of curriculum to cover, but not really saying how that's going to be done, although I'm certain that's more in consultation with educational professionals and deciding how you're going to apply it to your curriculum in your district and also your particular class and the students that you have in front of you. There's quotes from Strauss Zelnick, the chairman and CEO at Take-Two, of course from Sid Meier, and also a company that is merging with Glass Lab, Michael D. Gallagher, president and CEO of the Entertainment Software Association, says, video games are today's most dynamic and compelling art form in the world, and its ability to captivate and engage audiences of all ages is unparalleled. The potential influence of Civilization EDU in the American classroom is another illustration of that promise. You do mean North American classrooms, right there, Michael?
No.
Only thing that I really have to otherwise go on from this is in terms of pricing, the pricing is much more competitive as compared to what was offered for Minecraft EDU. The Minecraft educational version, it's in beta right now, and it's going to launch in the fall. Microsoft really hasn't talked about pricing for that and how that compares. But there was a licensing cost per student, a one-time licensing cost of about $35 per student. So if you're talking about a classroom of 30 students, I mean, that was an outlay of about, you know, $600 American. Then there was the option with Minecraft because, you know, it's very much can be server-based in order to, of course, have students go in and engage. There was a hosting plan for $25 U.S. a month, and that gave you access to one game. Whereas with the games that GameLab has, they have a number of games that, depending upon you're going for a web-based application or you're going to go on the iPad or the PC, the Mac, looking at anywhere from 5 to 11 games, and the cost, comparable size of 30 students, is, if we're talking about $25 a month for hosting, say it's $84 a year. Plus, again, it wouldn't just be Civilization EDU, although I'm, of course, assuming that Civilization EDU would be part of this package that they would add to it. You know, don't know about that. But definitely interested in learning more. The one thing that I will say, and I will quote from the press release, and it makes me cringe, and this is not Education Cast, so I will not go into a tangent, but harnessing the popularity and innovation of interactive entertainment and turning it into a powerful tool for the classroom and alternative to standardized tests. That is pure speculation and understandable hopeful speculation on the part of Glass Lab and 2K, because that would undoubtedly bring them in a considerable amount of money if they were able to arrange that. I think even saying a supplement to standardized tests is very speculative at this point, but having more video games in the classroom, so long as it is actually connected to learning something and the curriculum, and it's engaging students, and not only is it affordable, but I'm also interested in knowing these things called system requirements. I expect they're going to be comparable to Civilization V, which is in and of itself a problem in schools, unless you're going to be saying, so you can play this game, but you are responsible for bringing your own device students that is going to be able to run this game, which is a whole other set of considerations and problems. It is encouraging to see that there is now going to be an official Civilization educational version. Hopefully they will learn the lessons, both good and bad, of what Civilization has been done in some classrooms, mostly post-secondary at college and university from what I've seen, but some high school as well. Essentially extend that edutainment. We don't hear that term enough, edutainment, that it's definitely not to be a replacement for quote-unquote traditional means of education, but it is an encouraging supplement, and I hope this does in fact come to fruition. Yay, fun with games!
So now to pass your history class, you have to do like some historical battle.
You have to win
battle.
On deity.
No, that's only honor classes. Forever.
As an aside, news agencies, when you are reporting on this, some of you are really good at writing headlines, and some of you are really good at writing headlines that are just for clickbait. I like the headlines such as, "This history lesson needs more video games," from Destructoid. Or, "For Access Partners with Glass Labs for Educational Version of Civilization V," from Gamma Sutra. That's good. However, U.S. school set to adopt strategy game Civilization V to show, not tell history lessons from The Drum, or my favorite from Toon Zone, Civilization V being donated to high schools.
I think they would like you to pay for that.
Clickbait is awesome.
It is just so clickbait.
Free Civ, free Civ.
Well,
Dana, it's not just limited to this article. I've seen it everywhere.
Oh, I know. And unfortunately, any news source that you go to other than the press release is just a regurgitation of the press release, either condensed or moved around, or someone's own editorialization of what they think there's going to be. There isn't even an official Civilization EDU website yet. Because why? But anyway, more on this as it develops in the coming year, and a little bit.
Uber says in the chat, great, Dan's going to teach kids how to bully city-states. I can just imagine, like, all the kids are trying to be nice to city-states, and Dan's just face-palming like, no, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, you got to bully people this way.
Dan's going to be Greece and just completely roll over all of his students, take everyone over.
I will join into that game pretending to be a student, like I'll use a random name, and I'll reveal who it is. And then I'll just nuke the crap out of Dan, and when he tries to punch a student, he won't be able to figure out who's doing it.
You with your copy of Civilization EDU, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
Hey, I work at an educational institution. I might be able to swing it.
Uh-huh.
You might. I think it's just going to be open invitation to be able to join my game, huh?
Open invitation, you say? That's not the way these things work, Dan.
I'm totally Timmy from the third row.
Yeah. All I need is one student to set me up.
And although Mackie wouldn't say this, I just had my Mackie saying, yeah, and I'm Jenny from the block. Totally.
Jenny from the block is declared war on Dan Q. All your districts are pillaged.
I don't have to worry about my districts, Phil. This Civilization EDU is based on Civ 5, not Civ 6.
Uber's going to contact all of your students and pay them to troll you.
Yeah. I don't think that that's needs much pay, though. Like, they kind of have incentive already.
He's going to sweeten the deal with the cash.
I'm sure at least one of your students would be willing. And if you're listening right now...
to all of Dan's students listening to his podcast.
Yes, we got feedback. Megabears fan did write a follow-up blog. There's a link on the feedback thread, which I would be poorer to read out on the podcast, because you should probably just look in the thread and click the link, but it's there for based on that episode. Let's see here. Yeah, what did you want to emphasize here?
The Marshmallow Bear in particular, his feedback with regards to diplomacy and multiplayer, which we were talking about on the last episode.
Oh, yeah, the denouncing player. He wants to be able to denounce other players in multiplayer, and I agree. The game should have a system where that actually is meaningful in a multiplayer environment as well as a single-player environment, even without AI involved. Have that actually mean something.
In-game, yeah.
In terms of relations in-game, yeah.
Isn't denouncing someone in a multiplayer game basically just saying, I denounce you, though?
Yeah.
Right now, yes, but the point is, you could make it a mechanic that has tangible in-game effects beyond just, hey, I don't like this person, you should declare on them in chat. You could do it.
Mm.
And Civ Diplomacy needs stuff like that, because right now, in 5, and even before 5, is kind of shallow. Good work, in theory. They were, like, implemented decently and fleshed out at the start.
And there's some other comments as well, but I'm just going to highlight from Haig, a new status symbol for a Civ fanatic getting name-dropped on Polycast.
Aww.
And there's a smiley face to go with it, so it's a positive status symbol, not a negative. It's like being famous, not infamous.
It depends on the context in which of us name-drops you. Association with me is that it has two edges to it.
It is questionable at best. Yeah, that's true.
It's a double-edged sword. An extra long sword at that. It reaches far.
What's that? Long swords in Civilization VI confirmed? Is that what you just said, Phil?
Close enough.
We start with short swords, then we get swords, then we get long swords.
That's right. Thunder.
What are we talking
Thunder.
About now?
Oh. I don't even.
Support the ongoing Polycast Patreon campaign.
Collective achievements.
Personal incentives.
Month-to-month commitment.
For more information, visit thepolycast.net/Patreon.
Call in today.
In North America, 301-637-7659.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
Log on to the series official website at
thepolycast.net.
Dan, do you need someone to lighten you up? We're here to help.
I'm not here to help. I'm here for the land.
Is it just because Dan's a year older since the last Polycast? Now he's getting old and cynical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Getting cranky.
Old man.
Keeps yelling at us to get off his lawn.
Mm-hmm.
He says that a lot to me whenever I show up with a maple cannon, so.
Yeah, must be because he's old.
Anything else for Civ 6? And then I know. Is it October yet?
What is it?
When's for Octagon?
Wow, you're so excited for my birthday. Thanks, guys.
Hey, you're not the only October birthday around here.
Oh, well, I was going to say something, Troy, like, hey, now we have something to look forward to in October, but that's
yeah, I didn't remember. Who else has a birthday in October?
Stakes were made.
Well, the stakes were almost made. He didn't actually make it.
Close enough.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. I have been joined by my fellow regular co-host, Makalua.
Need more coffee, please.
The Mean Team.
You cannot afford for it. Afford my Civ 6 sword.
Imagine.
Screw your shirt, I got a gun.
And guest co-host Talcove.
4X for you.
And I'm Dan Q.
But my sword is steel that's been folded thousands of times. I can cut through your gun's bullets.
Sure.
I went past Phil his fedora.
But everyone knows katanas are, like, so much better than swords, like those European swords.
I didn't specify what type of sword I was wielding.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't think Phil would have the fedora. I think Mad would have that. Phil would have the troll face mask, and Mackie, you'd be wearing a raspberry beret. And
are we playing Payday? Is that what's going on here?
Record date June 25th, 2016. Civilization 6 clips, courtesy 2K Games. Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at stiffcom.net.